please the court. My name is James Frank. I represent Expert Electric. Expert Electric is here today to seek reversal of two NLRB orders that wrongly found that it had violated the Act. First violation, and the most important reason why we're here, is that the board found that Expert violated the Act by recognizing its employees' petition. This is a case where it's undisputed that 9 out of 10 employees demonstrated they did not want to be represented by the union.
The difficulty you've got, though, is that the 10 are not the union. The unit is the employees of the multi-employer bargaining association rather than the single employer. Is that not the case?
That is the board's position. That gets to the free speech issue.
So that was the certified unit, was it not?
The certified unit was a multi-employer unit. However, months prior to the employees' action, the multi-employer association expelled Expert from the association for one reason. It made verbal statements that the leadership disagreed with. And for that reason alone, they were expelled from the association. This case
I
is very.
The findings of fact supported a conclusion that it wasn't the statements, it was the style of participating in the meetings that caused the expulsion. That is to say, they said the representative of Expert came and ranted and raved and prevented them from being able to do anything, rather than the content of his statements. Is that not what the finding was?
Well, that's what the board, that is what the board said in its decision. But if one goes back and reads the transcript of what was before the administrative law judge, there is no conduct alleged. It was that Mr. Michelotta, Frank Michelotta, said various things, disagreed with the strategy of the association, and was described as being
there was testimony that said he came and ranted and raved, and testimony we couldn't get anything done, wasn't there not?
That is still verbal conduct. And I believe that Section 8C of the Act is consistent with the First Amendment, and that could not have been coercive to employees. This was purely in the context of an employer association meeting. And John Michelotta testified that he did not want to leave the association. The only evidence in the record was that one person spoke up, and that is why Expert was expelled. And I believe that 8C specifically says that the board cannot rely on the exercise of speech, whether it's loud or quiet. It's an absolute prohibition. And the board doesn't.
That's a content restriction they're dealing with there, though, rather than, I don't think there's anything about the loudness or quietness. I don't think it protects the right of an employer to go shout in the ears of other members of a association, does it? I don't think that's ever been decided, has it?
Well, I certainly have never seen a case dealing with that.
I think Justice Black would talk in terms of the difference between content of speech and speech conduct.
But it believed the record testimony was about content. Mr. Michelotta disagreed with how the association was proceeding.
And haven't you already conceded that there was evidence to the effect that he did so by ranting and raving, and that he prevented the meeting from being able to do anything?
No, what I said was that the board made that finding.
Well,
but I believe that the only
to that effect.
Well, the only person who testified to that was Mr. Bellantoni, who had been otherwise generally discredited by the board on every other issue. In other words, on the issue
of you're saying we should go back and reweigh his credibility on that issue?
I know this court doesn't do that. And what I am saying, though, is that there is no conduct. There was no fistfight. There was no behavior. Mr. Michelotta was engaging in speech. And I believe that the Act specifically protects that speech. It doesn't say only polite speech. But in any event, this is different, I believe, than the case where an employer doesn't pay his dues. I mean, the board has certainly said you can't cause your own expulsion by not paying dues. Here's a situation where bargaining was really futile. Now, Banana Lynn raised the issue that impasse alone was not grounds for withdrawing from multi-employer bargaining. Here, Expert's employees saw that bargaining was futile and not going anywhere. And in our brief, we've gone through all the indicia, and you heard in the prior case, where that bargaining hasn't happened. The board's remedy is that experts' employees can never get out of this association, even though it's now been 17 years since the certification. There is never an opportunity for them to exercise their Section 7 rights. If UCA and Local 3 do not reach an agreement, they can never withdraw from the
union. How is that any more true now than it was at the beginning of the association certification of the bargaining unit?
Well, there is now demonstrated futility and breakdown of the bargaining process.
It's a different question. Your assertion was that the employees can never get out. Employees of the single employer can never get out of the association's bargaining unit. How is that any more true today than it was when the bargaining unit was first certified?
That has in the normal case,
the bargaining is broken down or not.
Well, normally, the presumption against withdrawal from the multi-employer is 1 year. In the administrative law judge's decision in the Roberts case, there's a reference that the presumption is for the first year of bargain on an initial contract. The board's basic doctrine was never applied to an initial contract. And the whole rule about withdrawing from multi-employer bargaining after
notice. So your statement that they can never get out is based on what?
That until there's
what is it that has created the circumstance under which they can never get out?
Okay. If there is no contract, the board position is they cannot withdraw from the unit until the next open period of a contract. If UCA and Local 3 entered into a contract, there would be an open period 60 to 90 days before the expiration of that contract. And according to the board, that would be the time that expert could withdraw from the unit. If UCA and Local 3 never reach a contract, there will never be an open period where they could withdraw from the association. And the employees could never file a decertification petition. In other words, as you heard in the first case, it's not likely there's going to be a contract there. Absent a contract, the board's position is these employees can never exercise their Section 7 rights.
I'm having a very hard time following how that circumstance. The bargaining order certainly restricts their right to exercise their Section 7 rights. But you seem to be saying there's something beyond that that says they can never get out. And I'm asking you how that is any different. What creates that circumstance about this order or even about the passage of time that is any different than it was on the day the bargaining unit was certified?
The difference
and
I'm
not hearing a direct answer to that.
The fact that UCA and Local 3 have not reached an agreement.
That causes them not to be able to ever get out when they could have gotten out before they had never reached an agreement 2 years ago?
I believe that after 1 year, under the Roberts administrative law judge decision, they could have moved to come out. But the board takes the position otherwise. They're saying that until there's an agreement, no one can leave the multi-employer bargaining association.
Okay, go ahead.
The second problem is that expert, under the board's order, is not part of this association anymore. Expert's employees and expert are disenfranchised from the bargaining process. The board reversed the administrative law judge's decision that expert had to be reinstated. So we have the situation where expert's a non-member of the association. The board says it doesn't have to become a member of the association, and that it will be bound by any agreement the association may reach. If no agreement is reached, expert and its employees are in limbo. They're not part of the association, and yet there's no contract. So they are in a standby and wait position, and they cannot exercise their Section 7 rights. The other issue that we have appealed is on the information case. In that case, the board had previously dismissed all the charges against expert. In 1995, there was the original charge against UCA, which did not name expert electric. There was a separate charge that specifically named expert. That case was settled. Board's prove the withdrawal. The union said they had all the information, including the telephone numbers, and the case against Expert was withdrawn. 3 years later, the board amends the Yuka case to name Expert for the first time. And they have now found that 3 years before the amendment and 11 years ago, Expert delayed for 2 months in providing 13 telephone numbers. We don't think that decision can be affirmed. It is certainly de minimis at best, and it violates basic due process. The board created a convoluted agency theory that Expert had no prejudice by this delay. They agreed the board was delayed, that it was unreasonable delay, and the only reason they affirmed the judge's decision was they said there was no prejudice. But the prejudice was demonstrated by the union's testimony, where they had written on the sheet when they received the information, October 19th. They admitted writing that. The testimony was, oh, I didn't mean that. That was a mistake. That was 6 years after the fact. That, to me, is clear prejudice on what the delay did.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the respondent.
May it please the court. In this case, under Retail Associates, an individual employer cannot withdraw from multi-employer bargaining after negotiations have started without union consent. But here, Expert did exactly that. In defense, it argues that unusual circumstances justified its untimely withdrawal. As I stated earlier, the unusual circumstances exception to Retail Associates is limited to the most extreme situations.
So is counsel correct, then, that without the union's consent, if there's never a contract, they can never withdraw?
Well, under existing precedent, an individual employer cannot withdraw until it's time to negotiate a successor contract.
Yes. Yes, they can't ever get out.
Well, I wouldn't say ever until there's an agreement, they can't get out.
So that if there's not an agreement, they can never get out.
Well, in that hypothetical,
we have a circumstance where 90% of their employees have signed a desire to decertify, but they can never get out. There's nothing they can do, nothing the employer can do that can get them out. Is that correct?
In that hypothetical situation where there's no agreement,
this is the case before us.
Well, if
there's before us is there is no agreement, no apparent prospect for a soon agreement. 90% of the employees have signed the petition to decertify. The employer has tried to withdraw. And you, I think, are saying, yes, that's right, they can't withdraw. Without union consent, there's nothing they can do for those employees to get out of the union. They don't want to be in anymore.
Unless they convince the rest of the unit to go with them. The unit
I think that is a yes, then. There's nothing they can do as an individual.
Well, as... Because they are in a multi-employer unit, the only way to decertify the union in that unit is for the entire unit to do so.
Well, can the entire unit, if to follow up on Judge Santel's questions, let's suppose that the unit consisted of 1,000 employees and 600 of them before a contract that, you know, it's been years they've been negotiating and say, we're sick of this union. And 600 of them sign a decertification petition. Can they do that?
I believe they can do that.
Yeah. Because I understood counsel for the company to say they couldn't.
I don't think that's accurate. I think that if the entire or a majority of the entire unit wish to decertify the union, they could do so. But here, because...
Is that true while the bargaining order is out there?
Well, assuming
that... In the face of the bargaining order, could they do
that? Well, assuming that bargaining resumes after enforcement of this case, the unit cannot decertify until they have bargained for a reasonable period of time, which is 6 months to a year.
Right.
But after that point, they could oust the union. And in this case, when expert withdrew, it gave one reason for that withdrawal, that it had received a decertification petition from its employees. And as I've indicated, the employees of an individual employer cannot act alone because they are not a separate unit. And any decertification petition must be supported by the entire multi-employer unit. The board has never allowed a subset of a unit to decertify just for itself. In addition to the decertification petition, expert now asserts several other defenses for its untimely withdrawal. The expulsion from the association, the interim agreements, and the union's conduct. Turning first to the expulsion issue, expulsion is not a defense for untimely withdrawal, and we've cited a number of board and court cases where expulsion has been rejected as a defense for untimely withdrawal. Withdrawal requires the consent of all three parties.
Number one, I'm not sure what you mean by untimely. And number two, they didn't withdraw. They were kicked out. So why are you withdrawal sounds like they've taken, expert has taken some affirmative action to walk away from the multi-employer unit, but they were expelled.
Well, to take out one employer from the unit, it still requires the consent.
But it's
of
not
all
a withdrawal. They didn't withdraw.
Well, I mean, even if you even if I don't use the word withdraw, they're still out of the unit.
So the law is that simply because you were expelled from the multi-employer bargaining unit and cannot attend any of the meetings, cannot engage in any of the strategy sessions, and are no longer represented by the multi-employer unit, the law is that nevertheless that association can reach an agreement and force you to abide by it.
That is the existing precedent, yes.
That's in cases in which there is action by the employer that indicates that the employer was trying to get out very cleverly out of the unit, for example, or out of the association for not paying dues. Are there any other cases? Are there any cases where somebody's been kicked out for other than not paying dues?
Well, most of the cases are for non-payment of dues. I do have one case.
One case.
One case that I was able to find was Custom Wood from the Eighth Circuit, and in that case,
is that cited in your brief?
Yes.
What's the name of it again?
Custom Wood.
Custom Wood.
Yes.
Okay, tell me what happened there.
In Custom Wood, the employees of that employer wished to oust the union for themselves, learning of that, the association forced or asked that employer to resign from the association. So in that sense, it was a forced resignation. And in that case, the board and the Eighth Circuit agreed that the employer could not remove itself from the unit.
The employer there resigned, right?
Well, was forced to resign.
Was asked to resign.
It was asked to resign, which it did.
So
yes,
it's not the same.
Well, that's the closest case that I have, Your Honor.
What's the name of the case?
Custom Wood.
And that's in your brief?
It's on page 25 and 26 of the brief. In a footnote.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, did you find it or?
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I was looking under the in the index to your table to your brief under Custom Wood.
It's this NLRB versus.
Built backward. It's
yes.
NLRB versus Custom.
Yes.
But in that situation, I haven't read that case. But was the employer did the employer have an opportunity to go back into the association?
I don't recall if there was an opportunity for the employer to get back into the unit or the association.
Suppose expert has no opportunity, is not given any chance to get back into this association. You've been kicked out. We don't want to have any part of you. Does that make any kind of a difference?
Well, I don't believe so. In the other cases, now, I know that they were non-payment of dues cases, but, you know, still, those employers were kicked out or expelled, and they were still held to execute the association agreement. And if I could just move on to the free speech argument that Experts Council has made, that entire argument has been waived because it was never raised to the board. What Expert did raise to the board was, you know, expulsion generally as a defense, but nowhere in its exceptions to the board or its brief to the board did Expert raise Section 8C or free speech. So on that basis, the court lacks jurisdiction to hear that argument. And furthermore, as was discussed earlier, the board's position was that it was not the content of Expert speech, but the way in which it was vocalized.
You used the phrase, and I only heard your explanation in part of it, untimely withdrawal. We talked a little bit about withdrawal. What do you mean by untimely?
Untimely in the sense that Expert tried to withdraw after negotiations began. And with respect to the interim agreements and the union's bargaining tactics, our position is essentially the same as in the other case. If the court would like to address any particular questions on those issues.
I didn't hear what you just said.
On the issue of the interim agreements and the union's bargaining conduct, the board's position is essentially the same as in the association case. But certainly if the court has further questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, counsel. Seeing none, thank you, counsel.
I'm sorry, I didn't get to the information case. Sorry, I have a couple minutes left. With respect to the information case, the violation that was found was that Expert delayed by 4 months in providing its employees' telephone numbers. It did provide employees' names and addresses beforehand, but it never provided the employees' telephone numbers until January 1995. With respect to Expert's argument that this was encompassed in the dismissal of another case, that was a completely separate charge relating to pension remittance reports. It had nothing to do with these lists of employees. And so the only case that was withdrawn with respect to Expert was that pension remittance report. The employee information case was always outstanding, and there was no settlement or withdrawal of that charge. Unless there are any other questions,
seeing none,
I thank the court for its time. Thank you.
How much time do you have left?
3 minutes.
Okay, you have 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think the board is wrong in saying that employee desires are irrelevant in the multi-employer context. I think the board has taken its retail associates doctrine and the general concept of stability and bargaining to an extreme where they say that the employee desires are irrelevant.
I don't think they're saying that, though.
The decision actually said that in the judge's decision.
They're talking about the unit as a whole. The employee desires wouldn't be irrelevant in the unit as a whole.
No, but he said the desires of Expert's employees
right,
are irrelevant.
Right, I understand that. It depends how you define the group that's at issue, though.
Well, but as the court raised the issue in the other case, this is, in effect, a bargaining order against Expert. Expert has accepted to a bargaining order.
You don't argue against the bargaining unit remedy as such in this case, do you, counsel?
Well, we did accept to that.
You don't argue it in your brief here, do you?
No, we're focusing
on
Expert.
I know you're familiar with that argument. Right. It's been a good one for you in the past representing other people, but you don't make that argument in this case.
We don't think the board can enter a bargaining order regarding Expert because there's a demonstrated majority of employees who don't want to be represented by the union. And the board would agree under its Levitz doctrine in any single employer case that there should not be a bargaining order.
But am I not correct that you didn't make the bargaining order argument in this case? That was made in the association's case. You haven't made it in your brief.
Well, what we did was we adopted the association's position on that issue. We did not spend time on that issue. We were focused more on the issues that we think are more egregious here. On the 8C issue, I would refer the court to page A1012 of the appendix, where we did accept to the board's finding in regard to the free speech issue before the board. It's on page 8, 1012 and 1013. I would also like to note that the board does not explain the Atlas case, where they allowed Atlas to withdraw from multi-employer bargaining for the purpose of signing a Local 3 agreement. It seems that the board's decision is totally inconsistent with what they're doing in this case, and they don't explain that. In Atlas, after a contract was signed, they signed a Local 3 agreement and withdrew from the association, and the board found it all right because they said Atlas might have needed to apply to the association for new membership. I would suggest the only difference is in one case, employees wanted to leave the Local 3 world, and in the other case, they wanted to join Local 3. Board does not explain that. The third point I would make is that the board, for the first time, has created a de facto agency bargaining order. Does not order expert to do any bargaining with Local 3. There is no action expert should take. Association should bargain, and the court will deal with that issue. Expert's not asked to bargain. Expert is asked to stand on the sidelines. Whatever happens in the association, there's a contract. If there's not, expert would have to sign it. In the meantime, expert's employees can't do anything. So what you could do.
I have the same question for you I had in the other case. If you concede, I'm not asking you to concede, but if we hold that the board is correct that you're not out of the union, then what else can the board do? What do you say would have been an appropriate order if we hold against you on that first point?
That you're now in the court. I believe that given the passage of time,
with reference to elect expert,
should have dismissed this case as moot.
I'm asking you to concede that you've lost on that part.
Okay.
That we've held against you on the merits. Now, what should the remedy be? You say the remedy is wrong because it causes you to be represented by an association you no longer want to be part of.
I would propose.
But what should they have done instead?
Direct an election among the employees. Let the employees vote and decide what they want. Section 7 of the Act gives employees rights. I don't believe employees lose those rights because there's multi-employer bargaining.
So you're back to the Lee Lumber argument.
Correct, Your Honor. And the board most in the last 6 months has really gone in that direction in the new Dana case, where they've said if there's voluntary recognition without an election.
So if we strike the bargaining order part of the remedy, then that satisfies what you're asking us to do.
But expert is not ordered to bargain. We're in a very odd situation.
I understand that, counsel, and you don't seem to be understanding my question. I know that they're not ordered to bargain because the board has held that they're part of a multi-employer bargaining association.
No.
You don't want to be. Now I'm asking you, what is the alternative for the board as a remedy since the unit is recognized as the multi-employer unit?
If I may, Your Honor, the board made a distinction. It reversed the administrative law judge and said that expert did not have to go back into UCA.
But it does still hold that this is a unit that includes expert employees.
That is correct. In that situation, we would go back to the unusual circumstances test of Banana Linen and saying that this bargaining has so broken down that it's non-existent, that there is a reason to allow expert to withdraw from that association and recognize it, and there should not be a remedy.
You're saying there's no remedy.
That is correct.
I think that's what you're saying. I think your time is up, and I don't see any further questions from my colleagues. So
thank you, Your Honor.
Submitted. Give us a recess.
Stand, please.